How do I pwn thee? Let me count the ways. I pwn thee to the depth and breadth and height my black hat soul can reach when feeling out of sight. For the ends of being an ideal back door, I pwn thee to the level of every day's most quiet pen test by fluorescent light. I pwn thee freely as men strive for beer. I pwn thee purely as they turn from Windows XP. And yes, I shall but pwn thee better after death. Welcome to another episode of Healthy Paranoia. Today I've invited some poets of pwnage to discuss the beauteous pen test Dropbox. Joining us will be Taylor Banks, that purveyor of security fun and games and owner of Ace Hackware, Dan Tentler, troubadour of tricks, Kyle Stone, the sonneteer of sneaky, Nick Lennox, minstrel of naughtiness, and the ever mysterious balladeer of body, Jay James. Hey guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So why don't we go around and just introduce ourselves? We have some new people on the show. Of course, everybody knows Taylor Banks. He's a show fan favorite. And we're having Taylor sort of initiated this particular episode because he has a brand new device to introduce to everyone, the Rutabaga. Right, Taylor?
That's it. That's it. And she's a bunch of fun.
Cool. So then we have Dan Tentler. You're new to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I do enjoy being the paid bad guy. It is generally a pretty good time.
That's good. And we met each other through an email introduction. Is that right? Through Jay?
Yes. We met over some very colorful work that involved teenagers in other countries.
Kyle, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm a information security engineer. I've got an upcoming talk with Liam Randall at DerbyCon 2013. We're speaking on the proliferation of embedded botnets, Carnabot in specific, and dropping a few O-dates.
Cool. We'll have to make sure we get that. I promote that when you guys, when that's done, and I'm sure they'll video it. They have that channel on Roku, which is amazing.
Yes. Iron Geek is amazing in his video talents. He is quite the guy to go to for the con scene.
And Iron Geek is amazing in other talents, not just his video talents. Then we have Nick Lennox. Why don't you talk about yourself a little bit, promote something?
No promotions. I just love hacking on embedded gear and radio gear and generally being the bad guy.
Okay. And, of course, we have the wonderful, ever-friendly and esoteric Jay James.
Jay? Greetings. Yes. I'm a San Diego transplant. I'm out here in Silver Spring, Maryland, doing assessment work now. I come to this by way of more hacking than the pen testing perspective, being that I don't get the opportunity to do a heck of a lot of that stuff, so I just took it upon myself as a hobbyist to see the smallest, most efficient kind of form factor I can do. After seeing the talk of these guys at DEF CON, they put a Dropbox in a UPS, or what looked like a UPS, and I thought that was pretty cool, so I thought, what can I do on my own? And I thought, well, what I did on my own sucked, so I went to the professional route and started buying these devices and got caught in the maze of, cabling and peripheral.
Well, let's talk about actually what a pen test Dropbox is. I think I wrote it's funny, I wrote a blog post about it about a year ago called Pwn Your Own Network, and it was actually really popular. I see a lot of hits still on it, and I talked about the Pony Express Dropboxes. I talked about the Mini Pwner, which I bought and really, liked. But what exactly, who has a good definition of what a Dropbox is or a creeper? Anyone?
Oh, boy. I guess I'll just jump straight in. This is Taylor. But, in essence, I would think of a pen test Dropbox, and I would say your article does a very good job of explaining much of the functionality. But they're small, quiet, unobtrusive, often embedded devices that we will typically place, on a target network during a penetration test. For any number of purposes, but generally not the least of which is either to extend our reach, maybe to act as a beachhead, or sometimes just to provide remote access. So in many cases, you know, the time that we've got on site during a pen test is very limited. So the objective will be to get into a wiring closet as quickly and quietly as possible and plant a device that we can then use to extend our reach, whether it's from, you know, a wireless network, a stall in the bathroom, or maybe optimally from a car in the parking lot.
Wireless in the bathroom. Yeah, I love that. I worked when I was at a university, we could get wireless in the bathroom.
I don't want to be a lot better than listening to people do their conference calls in the bathroom, right?
No kidding. So how many of you have found actually used pen test drop boxes on engagements? Tell me some cool stories about it.
I did. No, this is Dan. And my experience was I was doing a pen test on a financial institution that one of the things that they wanted to do was to see if the employees had any rogue wireless access points in their environment. So what I ended up doing was setting up basically Airbase NG, and Airbase NG allowed me to see what networks the employees in the organization were probing for, and then basically pretend to be that to allow myself to gain access to their machines. And then once I did that, I was actually just looking around to see if they were associated to anything or if they had anything in the network history of their of the machines on the office network. So fairly straightforward, but a slightly interesting approach to seeing, you know, is there a rogue wireless without actually having to drive to a bunch of different buildings to see if there's actually rogue wireless. You can just look at the configs of the machines that are on the network and see if they're configured to talk to wireless networks at all. Of course, you know, doing this from a little tiny box in, you know, from the passenger seat of my own car, you know, a parking lot.
That's good. So how did you, when you guys actually plug, some of you have plugged in a pen test drop box into an open network jack, right? I mean, and so how did you, what's the most interesting way that you've hidden these devices?
Well, I can tell you, and there's a, similar to your post, there's a blog post at the 8th Hackware site that is actually a true story, although the names and locations have been changed to protect the innocent. One of my guys used, in this particular case, it was a mini poner on an unnamed law enforcement agency. Actually had to social engineer his way in through a side door and literally took the mini poner into a wiring closet, popped it into a port on the switch, and Velcroed it to the bottom of the switch. The beauty of which is, especially in environments where people don't pay a lot of attention to wiring, you know, a small, you know, 6-inch to foot long RJ45 patch cable running underneath or beside the switch looks like every other network cable.
Sweet. Sweet. I mean, I've seen some where they put, I think it's on the Mini Poner site where the device is inside an Altoid tin. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah, I think one of Kevin Bong's earliest, I think that was, he was calling it the Minty Poner. So before the Mini Poner was the Minty Poner, and that was when he was doing it inside the Altoids can. But I think if I remember right, he had problems with wireless antenna signal strength, which is why he ultimately just kind of kept the original enclosure on that old wireless WR703N.
So it sounds like pen test drop boxes are useful for physical security, for port security on switches, also for wireless security. You guys have used it for that. Anything else? Any other interesting stories about drop boxes?
I had an engagement. This is Kyle. I had an engagement where there was unsecured physical access to a lobby after hours, and they had a VoIP phone on the front desk. And so I secured a drop device to the PC link port on the back of the front desk phone because there wasn't a PC station with it. They were obviously security-minded enough to do that. But had a piggyback jack off of it to power the arm device off of the barrel plug on the back of the phone as well. It worked out quite well.
That's very good.
And, Yeah, and a lot of people don't think about securing that type of stuff because it's, oh, it's a phone, but no, it's really not.
No, those are usually VoIP. Yeah, VoIP phones are usually plugged into trunk ports, and right. Yeah, they usually have an extra jack there for the computer.
Right, it's an embedded switch, so really you don't even see the port go up or down. So even if they're doing port monitoring, they won't see it flap. Now, if they're monitoring their ARP tables, depending on the model of the phone, some will propagate it up, some will mask it as the same ARP as the phone. Depending on the back-end chipset on the device.
Okay, so maybe a VoIP phone would be a really good pen test Dropbox.
Yeah, I love it. I'm thinking the same thing. Embedding one inside of a Cisco phone or it'd be right. Phenomenal.
Actually, I've already got one that I've been working on. Liam and I are going to be demoing a physical locality exploit on a particular phone where you can inject your Dropbox into the phone and walk away from it.
Oh, I cannot wait to see that. You guys have to hook me up with that. That is so cool. I've got to see that. That's going to be great. Man, that Liam, he comes off very, you know, you would never know that he's got so many tricks up his sleeve. Yeah.
I'll say another scenario, and this is actually a little bit less of a security scenario, but this was pretty interesting. A friend of mine who comes and attends the local Atlanta DC404 meetings does networking and security for a local university, and they actually use these devices, although they don't really use them as pen test drop boxes per se, because of the small size and the relatively good wireless antennas embedded in them. They use them basically for remote diagnostics. So they deploy these, for instance, in all of the dorms. So when they get complaints from folks about, you know, hey, my computer can't connect to your broken wireless network, they can literally remote into these little boxes and test signal strength on the wireless networks, you know, do site surveys and everything else without having to run out to each building. So it's a pretty cool use case.
Yeah, actually, I mentioned that in my article, too, because I had been looking for I was really impressed by some of the Dream plugs and all that stuff. They're the base hardware for some of the Pwn plug stuff that Pony Express makes. And I actually proposed that at one place that I worked at as an inexpensive monitoring option in our we had all these pops spread all over the world, and some of them were very small pops, and I thought it would be a great inexpensive way to monitor or allow an engineer to connect to wireless when you don't want to have switch ports, you know, open and up on a, you know, in your hub site. I thought it was a good option.
Absolutely. They're pretty awesome for that. I mean, again, small size, and, you know, they're pretty easy to power. I mean, most of these devices use a half a watt or less of power, so.
Well, and I see, so somebody said here, I guess, Kevin, are these your notes where you said that they're being used to lower operational costs for pen test engagements?
Yes, there's a number of pen testing companies that are currently either employing small drop boxes or are looking to the future to doing it. I won't name any names, but I know a few gentlemen who red team for a living, and, you know, they sit down with billable hours. So to increase billable hours, they have sales associates and pre-sales engineers and so forth put in drop boxes all over the place. And rather than traveling to these engagements, they'll sit at home, you know, hacking in their underwear, doing three or four different engagements at the same time. Because now they can multiply their billable hours by the number of engagements that they can manage simultaneously. It's really a boon for the consultants who are getting paid piecework. They're doing quite well in the industry right now.
Interesting. I never even thought about that application, but it's an interesting way to approach it. So, I mean, a lot of people might assume that a pen test Dropbox is only for somebody who's a security ninja or a pen tester. I mean, I actually propose that they could be very useful for network engineers or for people who maybe don't do a lot of pen testing, because it's an inexpensive way for you get up to speed and sort of take advantage of, you know, the way to hide it and playing with new tools. I mean, what do you guys think of that?
It's awesome. I mean, I think you've also made mention of using them, for instance, like as little remote snippers. So even if you're not really using it for, you know, security use or work per se, I mean, being able to connect to a remote device and just fire off TCP dump to be able to see what's flying across the network, what's happening, why are or are not, you know, appropriate devices talking to each other. I think they're awesome for that. I mean, it's a whole new, you know, subclass of network devices, and they just, because of the processing power and the available storage, they happen to be very well suited to security, but they're all really good multi-purpose devices, you know.
They're also extremely big in the VoIP market. It takes very little to process a VoIP phone call, and you see a lot of ATAs that are fashioned around small Linux boxes, a lot of VoIP phones that are fashioned around them, and as well the physical security management systems. For instance, the HID Vertex line is entirely based off of E-Trac's 100 megahertz MIPS CPUs running Linux.
Jay, you've done some pen testing work, right? Just a little bit, and you play around. What's your favorite Dropbox of choice?
At this point, I don't have a favorite, but I do like the Pwn plug. I own several devices at this time. I have a Pwn plug, and I've got a couple of Raspberry Pis, and of course I got my own homebrew micro ATX case with a like a dual diversity wireless router Velcroed around it. That thing is garish, but that's when I decided to, you know, let the pros handle this form factor. But I'm partial to the Pwn plug.
Really? That seems like a cool thing, but it was the price point was a little, I mean, for me to just have something to play with, I sort of went, ah, but I mean, I do hear good things about it. Taylor, yeah. You sell it, right?
Yeah, and I actually own all of these. So I've got a Mini Pwner, and we created the Rutabaga, so we got a whole bunch of those. But yeah, we've got a Pineapple. I don't actually have the OG150, which I think is... it's a different build for the same little WR703N routers, but I've also got the Pwn plug, partly because we sell it, but also partly because that was, you know, my background as well. I spent over a decade both performing and teaching pen tests. And I guess actually my first Dropbox, I don't know if anybody else here on the call had one, but I used to have a couple of Sharp Zoruses. And the Sharp Zorus was basically a little PDA device, but it ran a full Linux distribution, and it was a pretty cool device. It had a keyboard on it. You know, it was about the size of a Palm Pilot, a little bit longer to support the keyboard. So we were using Sharp Zoruses on engagements. And actually, I guess going back a little farther, long before the netbook market really ever emerged, I think they were Fujitsu. I want to say they were the Lifebook series, but like back around 99-2000. Fujitsu had some really small laptops, and we had a couple of engagements where we did the same thing. We'd literally Velcro one of these tiny little Fujitsu laptops on the underside of a rack when we were doing engagements and, you know, try to see what data we could pull. I think, as Jay said, I think, you know, in this space and the real small device space, I think the Pwn plug is certainly the Cadillac. You know, it's built on the Shiva plug, which... Of these devices, it's got a bit more processing power than the rest, and that's really kind of key when you get into, I guess, some more of the automated tools. So, you know, when you look at things like the Mini Pwner and some of these other devices, the slower CPUs and the limited onboard storage space means, you know, running Metasploit is a little bit more challenging. So, you know, it's hard for me to pick a favorite since I also now build these things for a living and sell them, hawk them on my site, but... But, you know, the cool thing is they're all cool devices, and they all kind of have their own, I guess, you know, hot points. They all do something a little bit better than the others, you know?
Well, okay, so we know that there are lots to buy out there, but what are your feelings, everyone? I mean, of course, Taylor, you have mixed feelings, obviously, because you sell them, and it sounds like you've made some in the past. What does everybody think, make or buy?
Definitely make. You can customize it to your situation.
We're in San Diego. We're currently working on a what I'd call a bite-sized Pwn plug. It's based off a Transcend N54L Wi-Fi SD card, a SPI Ethernet card, and a tiny little CR2032 battery. It'll run for 2 days, has Wi-Fi and Ethernet capability, and it's about the size of a bite-sized Snickers bar.
No way. I want one. Can you make me one?
These new Transcend Wi-Fi devices have little CPUs, basically, so they've got little processors. They're pretty amazing.
Picture.
Yeah, it's an ARM V5 processor.
Yeah, you guys got to get me a picture of that and put it right next to a bite-sized Snickers, okay?
Yeah, I'm definitely in the favor of building if you have, especially if you have customized needs. Like you were talking about off-topic builds for tiny devices. I was looking at basically a support phone home gateway for an engagement, and they needed around 2,000 units. Each one in a different sort of diversified network, but all Ethernet nonetheless. They needed a way of deploying them quickly, easily, with the fewest moving parts possible. We had settled on a Synology DS112J platform, in which I went in and basically added all the tools that we needed to do everything. Well, in that tool set, was also a OpenVPN phone home custom script that they would essentially plug it in, and first thing it would do is phone home, bridge up the connection, and they could go in and work from there.
And what kind of tools did you have deployed on those?
Standard network capture and SMB interface stuff, and some database auditing tools. Stuff for them. They were more doing development work on it, but at the same time, what they were replacing out in the field, it was saving them leaps and bounds above what they had already had implemented. The per endpoint deployment cost with shipping was right around $580, and we essentially lowered it down to a hair over $210 US. And so, for instance, that tiny ARM platform, the Marvel Kirkwood that it runs a single core 1 gigahertz, 128 megs of RAM. But what's interesting is that it has system on chip access direct to SATA. So we were throwing SATA SSD drives in it for no moving parts.
That's great, yeah.
You know, and they didn't need a lot of space for a Dropbox, so even a 40 or 50 gig or a 50 meg little SSD drive were the smallest thing I could manage to find at the time for as cheap as I could find it, suited it perfectly.
Well, now everything's small now. I mean, they have those Intel NUCs that if you wanted something a little bigger and a little beefier, I mean, it's still pretty small, and it's still something you could hide, but you could get a lot of power out of that.
Oh, definitely. So you could even go as far as to start into the realm of CPU cracking hashes at that point,
yeah.
Which you're not going to do on, you know, a 200 or 150 megahertz MIPS or ARM. That's not going to be advantageous.
Well,
you
we
want to funnel those off and then
What might be interesting is to sort of chain them so you have the smaller low power devices and then maybe they phone back to a middle device like an Intel NUC and you could do some interim cracking there before getting totally off site.
Well, small devices can also do, you can also throw some rainbow tables at them, and so they can truck along with rainbow tables and do okay. They're still not going to chug along too fast, but they're not bad if you give them tables.
Honestly, the native SoC this time on the Kirkwood really surprised me, especially on SSD with SATA. You could probably throw rainbow tables in that and it not be horrible. But, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so you guys made some cool
I'm also
stuff.
Kind of a fan of building them. I mean, admittedly, I guess there's a bit of a conflict of interest since I sell them, but I mean, we've got a post on how to build your own Rutabaga on the Rutabaga help site because, frankly, I think that's part of the fun of a lot of these devices is going through the process of building out the kit, if you will, Admittedly, we're not ashamed to sell pre-built devices to people that want a Pwn plug or a Mini Pwn or a Rutabaga. But I think, you know, the BYO route, you know, you learn a whole lot more about what the devices do and what you can do with them by going through the process of, you know, tearing one apart and building it from scratch.
And well, I am not embarrassed to buy one, though.
And again, though, if you have customization needs, that's definitely the route to go. I mean, no one wants to sit down and fabricate their own machine from scratch. Trust me, I've thought about using a Pi before, but, I mean, really, you're going to get a case and a SD card and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas, like the Synology box, yeah, it's a little more expensive, but it also comes in this nice little plastic consumer-grade case and looks all nice and has a power button. That's kind of handy.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective... Well, first, you really don't want me playing with a soldering iron. I'm not the most, you know, I tend to be a little clumsy, so it's probably a better idea for me to buy one than to try and start manufacturing stuff myself. And I just don't have time. It's because I get impatient. So, yeah, I tend to want to buy my device and have somebody else do all the testing that is frustrating and everything else. And some people just... have more fun with that than others.
And love it or hate it, I mean, a lot of folks doing security testing these days, you know, they're not Linux admins, or they've never spent any time as Linux admins, so they don't really understand the intricacies of linked libraries and managing, you know, the way a lot of these tools work together. And I, you know, like that's why it's nice that you can go and find builds and you can find boxes like these. And admittedly, I mean, you know, hey, you look at the Pwn plug as a great example. The target for the Pwn plug is not the average everyday hacker hobbyist. It's the commercial penetration tester. You know, it's an organization who's going to say, hey, buy one of these pieces of kit for everybody on the team and let these guys use them on deployments without having to spend the billable hours building boxes, you know.
Yeah, and you're right. That's like the Cadillac of, you know, especially the one that looks like a power strip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right, that one's right. It's a beast. It's awesome. It's awesome. Of course, the price tag is, you know, appropriately awesome as well.
Agreed. Unlike the Rutabaga, which is very reasonable in price, I'd like to say. I'm still waiting to play with one, but...
there is one on its way. So, you know, soon.
And I, of course, have a couple of pineapples. I think that's a great piece by... Darren Kitchen. He's done a great job with that device. Then, again, there's the OG150 by Darren Johnson. He's out of Australia. I actually do have that. I haven't played with it much just because I've been so busy. And but it's fun, and I have a Mini Pwner as well. And, you know, here, this is a funny story. So I was at Interop Vegas, right? And TP-Link had a booth, okay? And I go up to the booth and I said, wow, this is great. You guys, you know, everybody in security uses your device to make pen test drop boxes. And they went, what? What are you talking about? And I said, no, you know, the Mini Pwner. And I, you know, talked a little bit about the device. We had no idea. Now, granted, these are salespeople and, you know, on the road and everything, but I think it was a bit of a mystery to them.
Yeah, and they're probably also a couple of degrees removed. I mean, like, admittedly, and I've tried, because the Rutabaga is also built on a TP-Link. It's a different TP-Link than the Mini Pwner. But I tried going the route of buying direct from TP-Link because we're doing such quantity now. But even then... Even with the quantity that we're doing, you know, we still ultimately have to go through distributors and or just we deal directly with importers. So, like, for instance, the company that I'm buying hundreds of these units at a time from, they're not TP-Link. They're a Tier 1 distributor or importer for TP-Link. So TP-Link is probably just far enough removed that, you know, unless they're watching blog posts and Twitter feeds and looking for mentions of their name, they may not really, you know, catch wind of what's happening. You'd think they would be doing some brand monitoring, though, and see people's web pages mentioning their devices, right?
I know. TP-Link, if you're listening, security people like your devices.
That's right. Reach out to Taylor at Ace Hackware and give him a better deal.
So you mentioned the Raspberry Pi, because there's that framework called the... What is it called? The Pony Pie? Is that right?
There's
two of them, actually. There's PwnPy, and then there's oh, I'm drawing a blank on the other name. There was one that was put out by the guys over at Pony Express, and then there was another one that somebody dropped onto their GitHub repository. I'm drawing a blank. I'll look for it here.
Has anybody played with the Raspberry Pi in that? Kyle, you mentioned that you had. Jay, Dan, any of you guys play with it?
I tried. When the Raspberry Pis first came out, I think I got one of the first couple revisions of PwnPy. And the trouble that I was having with it was the only keyboards I had available to me were the Apple keyboards. And when you plug the Apple keyboards into the thing, it would kernel panic. So I didn't get very far. And I have two Raspberry Pis, and they're sitting gathering dust until I have some free time to play with them. But my intention is basically to sort of poach a bunch of the stuff that Nick's done. I'll let him talk about it, but he did this really cool hack with replacing inline JSON and targeting mobile applications. But some of that stuff was very effective and also very, very hilarious.
What's the hilarity? Come on.
I just built a framework that sits on top of either a Raspberry Pi or an OpenWork access point or just a generic Dropbox in general. It's all Python. That's designed to kind of man in the middle mobile applications. A lot of cell phones and mobile applications use plain text JSON, plain text HTTP to pass data back and forth between the client and the server. And
nice. It's
just some rather interesting hilarity. We've played with Bible applications, mail applications, Yahoo Mail, things like that.
Oh, we need video. You must send show notes. You guys must. Just you must send me that so I can put it online. So does anybody have a favorite in terms of hardware platform for their pen test Dropbox of choice?
I got to say, for me, it's a split. I really like the Raspberry Pis, and I'll add to you were asking about the Pi. One of the cool things about the Pi, and you know, although there are some Dropbox-specific distributions, one of the things that's cool about the Pi is there's also a full build of Kali there. So now, you know, you've basically got Backtrack that you can run on the Raspberry Pi, and that's a pretty full-featured security distro. So in addition to Dropbox capabilities, you know, you've got a pretty pervasive kit. Admittedly, I really like the router that we chose for the Rutabaga, which is it's a TP-Link MR3040. And we went with the 3040 because it's got essentially the same specs as the router used by Kevin Bong for the Miniponer. That little router is a 703N. The 3040 is basically the same guts, but they flattened it out and they dropped a battery into it. So we've got this super thin, you know, it's basically the size of a cell phone. It's long, thin, narrow, but now it's got a 2000 milliamp hour battery built in. So unlike the Miniponer, unlike the Pineapple, unlike the PwnPlug, you don't have any external power requirements. You literally drop it in your pocket and flick a switch to on, and you're, as we had on our little banner at DEF CON this year, a pocket full of Pwnage.
Speaking of the 3040, I do like the inclusion of the little switch that's connected to the GPIOs that you could read, allowing you to put three different configurations or change things on the fly without having to shell in or use a keyboard.
Totally, and actually, so the version that we, basically the Rutabaga version 1, which we released at DEF CON, we're actually using V1 of the 3040 hardware, which did not have the little switch, but we have, I'll wait until we all get to DerbyCon, but we've got an announcement coming around the DerbyCon timeframe that's a V2 that not only takes advantage of that switch, we've got some new modes, and potentially you'll find some rainbow tables making their way into the kit. So yeah, we're doing a lot of fun things with the 3040s, and they're amazing little routers. Heck, they're amazing just as routers, but when you put some Pentest Dropbox kit on them, they're pretty phenomenal.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. I'm glad to hear about that. So you'll be able to just with a switch be able to switch use a different configuration. Is that?
Yeah, so the thing about the Rutabaga, I mean, admittedly, you know, what we put on the little help page, we stood on the shoulders of giants building these. What my objective was, I was really looking for newer hardware for the Miniponer, because the Miniponer is a beautiful little device, but by the time you tether a battery to it and network cables and you're carrying all this around in your pocket, basically the guy who was doing the engagement for law enforcement agencies. You know, you walk into a building with a mini punter in your pocket, and it looks like you've got a mini punter in your pocket. So the objective was to find something that looked a little bit more discreet. So we found the hardware, but I've been in love with my Pineapple for a long time. Like you said, Darren did a really good job as a Wi-Fi man-in-the-middle device. So that's really the whole magic of the Rutabaga, is that it's just a multifunction device. In one mode, it is a straight-up pen test drop box. It acts and performs almost identically to the Mini Poner. A little bit more kit in there. In the other mode, it performs just like a Pineapple. We took the open-source web interface from the Wi-Fi Pineapple project. So when you flip it into Pineapple mode, it is, for all intents and purposes, it looks, it feels, it tastes like a Pineapple. So right now, that's all software switch. You know, you drop to a shell and type activate Pineapple or activate Mini Poner. But given the 3040 version 2, now you basically flick a switch and the device will come up in these two modes plus a few other modes we've got up our sleeve.
Oh, that sounds cool. And so, of course, since nobody else is going to say it, I am. Is that a Mini Poner in your pocket, or are you just glad to see me?
Exactly. And that was, that was the motivation for finding new hardware. And frankly, if somebody was glad to see it, it was a pretty strange form of glad, you know, 2 inches of square plastic in your pocket with cables coming out. What's going on?
That's why we're working with the new Transcend Wi-Fi cards out here. We want something that'll go in the shirt pocket and is pretty unobtrusive.
Yeah, I love that, Vis, and I want to hear about your progress, and we'll have to chat, you know, after the show, and I want to see, you know, what you guys can make this little Transcend do. I've seen people talking about them. I haven't actually bought one myself, but they seem like pretty amazing devices because, you know, again, you've got an ARM processor and an SD card, so that's awesome.
Yeah, and 8 gigs of storage all in there with SPI. It'll run off a CR2032 all day, no problem.
Yeah, that's amazing. We get like 7 hours out of the Rutabagas, you know, on a full charge, which is still pretty solid, but it's not quite the same as running off a CR2032 battery. That's pretty phenomenal.
Wow. There's an Easy AC battery. If you search Amazon for it's Easy ACC, it's a 12,000 milliamp hour battery, and it's like $40. It's like the size of a large. It's basically the size of like a. Yeah, it's actually the exact same size as a Galaxy Note 2, but twice as thick. And it will. I use this for my little Poner box, and it will run for very nearly 24 hours with doing standard wireless man in the middle, SSL strip, packet capture stuff before it tips over. So. I actually hardwired. What I did with mine was, and I really wish I could find cables for this, but I actually cannibalized some USB cables, and I created an attachment cable that will take the power from the battery and power a USB hub, and the data from the USB hub goes to it, for right now I have it set up as a Pineapple. So the Pineapple gets a two-port. No, the power comes from the battery. And I have a cannibalized USB cable for that. And the data goes out to the hub, and the hub takes its power from the battery. So that if you were to draw it out on a whiteboard, the power draw from the entire, you know, the entire setup comes only from the battery. You're not forcing the Pineapple to provide power for anything that you have plugged into the hub. And I found that this makes things run a little bit better, and you get a little bit better power management. So you're not making your device that you're doing your hacking with strain and cry to try and deal with providing power to like a USB stick and two USB wireless access wireless interface cards or whatever other peripherals you decide to attach.
Well, it sounds like you guys have used lots of different software frameworks for making these pen test drop boxes, and people do too. What are the most common things to use?
Python.
Well, I mean, in terms of, so there's the PwnPy framework. Taylor, what do you mostly rely on?
Well, in our case, you know, like the Mini Poner and the Pineapple, and that was really what made this such an obvious choice to us, both of these devices are built on OpenWRT, and that's the whole key here is OpenWRT is available for a whole wide range of wireless routers. Obviously, both of these TP-Link devices qualify. as does the device that the, you know, the original Pineapple runs on itself, the AR-151. So, you know, the beauty of OpenWRT is that despite the fact that it's designed for embedded devices, it is, for all intents and purposes, a full Linux distribution, and it's got a package repository. So, you know, with the Pineapple and kind of to Kyle's point, hey, if you want to build and customize your kit, you know, it's great to be able to build a device. But even in our case, you know, if you want to change the configuration of the Rutabaga, if you want to add packages, remove packages, if you don't want to use it as a security device, you've still got all the package repositories. So you can drop to a shell and do an opackage install, and you can install whatever packages you want from, you know, the parent repositories that are, you know, again, OpenWRT has got many hundreds, certainly probably thousands of packages at this point in time. So I like OpenWRT. It's a good base. You know, again, it's mostly for the embedded devices. So when you get up to like the Raspberry Pi and some of the slightly more powerful devices, you may not find OpenWRT builds for them.
Well, and don't the Pony Express guys, don't they release their, isn't it open source? Their framework?
Yeah, the open source framework doesn't have, you know, all of the guts that their commercial release does. And I don't think the open source version has been tracking all of the updates of the commercial. And, you know, understandably so. They're working on, you know, producing a revenue-generating product for commercial enterprises. So I think the open source build of the Pwn plug is a version or two behind. But, you know, it's kind of like with the Rutabaga, and you got to really applaud them for this. When they first released the Pwn plug, they basically released the code and the instructions and said, hey, you know, if you want to do this yourself, go buy a Shiva plug. Here's the code. You know, I mean, admittedly, a Shiva plug's a $99 device, so you can technically build what is the rough equivalent of a Pwn plug for $100 plus, you know, time and effort. You know, and again, the magic of what they do, and it's kind of the same with these devices, the Pineapple, the Rutabaga, et cetera, the magic is just the integration and the interface for people that aren't Linux admins or don't want to spend the time, you know, setting up an OS. Hey, you got a nice little push-button web interface. That makes sense, you know.
Well, I mean, it also sounds like, I get the impression sometimes, like me, that a lot of people come up with pen test drop boxes because they just have so much damn hardware sitting around the house.
For sure, for sure. What are you going to do with all these old PCs, right? They're not really good for using as a primary desktop, but oh boy, I bet this thing would run Metasploit just great, you know.
Yeah, now instead of stepping on Legos, I step on Raspberry Pis.
That's great. How many do you have? I thought you just had a couple.
I do have a couple. They tend to get strewn around.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about the legal issues. Have any of you guys been had to use your get out of jail free card when you've been doing engagements? I mean, do people find you, catch you while you're trying to put one in, or have they like pulled your pen test Dropbox out and then kept it?
Rule number one: never get caught. Also, having a USB battery that lets my thing live for 24 hours and having it in a hilariously bright yellow waterproof Pelican case means I can bury it.
Oh, do you really bury it?
Well, yes and no. So you find a big fancy planter with like – oh, so we're in Southern California, right? So everyone's right. – Oh, we're a California company. We're going to have a bunch of palm trees in front of our building. All right, rad. So you take a palm tree and you find the planter and you slide the hilariously bright fluorescent yellow Pelican case under a bunch of essentially tree shrapnel in the bottom of the in the soil. You're going to find leaves and you're going to find dirt and you're going to find other stuff. It doesn't have to be like buried. Like you don't need a shovel. You just need to like obscure it from view. And this thing will sit there by the front door and capture Wi-Fi probes, Bluetooth probes. You can have it take pictures. You can whatever you want. You can like full on surveillance for as long as the battery will last. And if you really wanted to throw down, you really wanted to go nuts, you could actually chain these two USB batteries together and you could say, well, let's surveil the front of the front entrance of the building for Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, NFC, RFID, and take pictures when you see. Like, for example, you could write a script in Python that when something of any nature is detected, like NFC or RFID, I mean, presuming you had that hardware set up, that it would take a picture. So you could actually link a photograph to a person walking in or out of the door. So you can, and at that point, then you can start, now, once you can identify a person by their phone's 802.11 broadcasts and Bluetooth broadcasts, then you can basically follow that person around. Like, imagine taking one of these Dropboxes and gluing it to a UAV and flying it around.
Oh, it's so good that you're not on the East Coast anywhere near where the NSA is.
That's somewhat reminiscent of Creepy Doll. I don't know if you've seen Creepy Doll. It was actually something that was, I guess it got debuted at ShmooCon last year, and then I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name right now. I'm looking, I'm cheating as I speak. Brendan, who basically did exactly that. He took a whole network of, I think in this case they were all Raspberry Pis, and did some pretty sophisticated surveillance just using, you know, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and almost entirely passively, which is a beautiful thing. Another thing to consider, too, actually, Mrs. Y, one of the things that you'll find in Rutabaga version 2 is we basically just got a self-destruct mode. So in the event that your Dropbox happens to get detected, you know, again, it's somewhat low power. There's only so much we can do. But basically, upon detection, we can just let the device basically do a nuke and pave. So once you've been detected at that point in time, the device can wipe itself out, effectively bricking the device so that it's difficult to prove that it was anything more than a little wireless router at any point in time.
Let me ask you something about that as well. Does it also wipe out the MAC address of the actual hardware interface?
Well, that's something that I haven't added, but I guess so we couldn't wipe out the hardware of the MAC address, but so many, many years ago I released an operating system at ShmooCon called Anonym OS, and one of the things we did by default was actually modify the MAC address that was used from boot on. So that gives me good ideas for some MAC address manipulation and the standard build, so I like it. I like it.
The one thing I would like to point out, if you do have persistent Dropboxes that are on foreign networks, there can be a conflict over if a breach should occur, and it occurs through your said Dropbox. It opens up some interesting legal aspects, but I'm not really aware of any legal precedent around the issue, but it has been discussed at length with a few lawyers.
Yeah, that's always an interesting conundrum, right? What if the device, the security device or object that you're using to assess a network or penetrate a network, what if somebody pwns you? That's always been the difficulty, right? I've seen that. How many people have seen security devices that have vulnerabilities and that actually I remember seeing some device get that was on the university network where I used to work. It got pwned. Somebody broke into it because it was built on Windows. It was an eval, of course. We didn't buy it because, you know, it was built on Windows. But we found it. We really took a lot of pleasure in telling the vendor how his device got hacked.
Yeah, also, downstream liability is pretty tricky too. It's hard to say what would happen, but yeah, I mean, irresponsible use of these devices could land somebody in a world of hurt, no doubt.
Also, there's the fun of the burden of proof lies on the people that are flapping their arms and calling the authorities in the first place. If you're going to go to the feds or whoever and say, "OMG, OMG, I got hacked," then they're going to say, "Cool, show us how, show us logs, show us PCAPs," and then they will say, "But we don't check logs. Nobody looks at logs. Who reads logs?"
I read logs.
Yeah, but you're one of the few, and you know it.
Yeah.
Of course, we also assume that everybody using these devices is always using them for legal purposes on networks that they have permission to do testing on.
Oh, because, you know, look at Weave. If Weave got 3 years in prison for going to a web page, then I imagine they just bring a chainsaw and they dismember you on site for something like this. No trial, no jury. They just get Jason Voorhees to show up and hack you to bits.
Well, that's a great image. So, do you guys have any advice? Say some new. There are plenty of noobs out there. I get lots of guys. A lot of network engineers come to me actually, and they say they notice that there are a lot of positions open for security people, and they're always, "Oh, how do I get started? Should I work on my CEH?" And I always try to get them to start playing with equipment before they actually go the certification route. What would you give somebody like – what kind of buying advice would you give somebody like that? Would you tell them to build something themselves as a learning experience?
Absolutely. It would be like get a Raspberry Pi or Wi-Fi pineapple and augment it. Tweak it, break it, make it run custom code, do some neat things. Understand what you're doing before you get behind the wheel of this particular little weapon system. You know, there's a really fancy Mark – I think it's a Mark 17 belt-fed grenade launcher that some military organizations use. And I'm presuming that before they will allow you to touch said grenade launcher, they'd probably want you to train on it. So for all intents and purposes, this is the same kind of approach where you're getting behind the wheel of a thing that's used to break stuff and steal information and, for lack of a better term, essentially do espionage. I mean, granted, it's espionage by request and by contract. Like people say, come espionage at me. But, yeah, come espionage at me, bro.
I want that shirt, dude. That's awesome.
Come espionage at me, bro.
Yeah.
I'd say Raspberry Pi is awesome, and really any device that runs OpenWRT. I think those are two things that for somebody that wants to learn to build a Dropbox. I mean, the Raspberry Pi can be so much more because there are so many projects available for it. So it's a really great piece of basic kit if somebody just wants to learn all of the things they can do. But there are also a million and one devices that run OpenWRT. In fact, I mean, I'd say probably 70% of the listeners of this show probably have some Linksys router or some other device in their house right now that runs OpenWRT. And technically, if you've got OpenWRT running, you can probably build something that's going to approximate a Miniponer or a Rutabaga or a Pineapple once you understand the bits and bytes and process. You can follow any of our guides, and you'll ultimately arrive at a very similar place. And, you know, again, being able to do that with a wireless router you've got sitting in your house, there's something to be said for that too.
I mean, I actually – it's somewhat related, but I – bought an Intel NUC because I live in a small condo, and I bought an Intel NUC, put a solid state drive in it and a wireless card, and I ended up putting ESXi on it. And it's my little VMware lab that can travel. I can buy an external battery and I can take it anywhere I want to go. And those smaller devices are very handy.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, you can technically Mac Minis also make pretty hot little ESXi servers as well. But
yes,
I hadn't thought about the Intel NUC for ESXi. That's pretty good.
No, that's a really good idea too. I wasn't thinking about putting that on a Mac Mini. Those are a little more expensive, but yeah.
Yeah, but they're also, you know, you've got some pretty serious processing power there too.
Yes, you are right. Well, so. Anybody have anything else to talk about with regards to what they're working on in terms of pen test Dropboxes?
Well, like I said, for me, you know, there's a Rutabaga version 2 essentially coming at DerbyCon, so I'll leave some of the secrets for the DerbyCon announcement. But yeah, that's what we're doing next. And as I mentioned on the call, you know, here basically we're just stepping up to the V2 of the 3040 hardware, and we're stepping up the software kit a little bit too. So that should be pretty fun.
Okay, that's good. So everybody now knows to wait for V2, but then rush to buy a Rutabaga. And Jay, what are you working on right now?
I'm working on getting this thing to run headless, autonomously headless. So I just plug it in, have it assimilate to a network, and start shoveling data to me. And one of the stumbling blocks I ran into is how do I kind of obfuscate my data exfiltration, and I came up with an interesting thing to use one of the public dynamic DNS servers, and I tweeted about this a little bit, but basically a friend of mine back home in San Diego wrote a script that would automatically set the dynamic DNS for the Dropbox. So all I got to do is, for my reverse shell is set up everything on my receiving end properly, and next thing I know, I'm getting fed data. So, I mean, I'm just trying to get the thing to run headless. That's my challenge right now.
No, I'd love to see a write-up on that when you do it. I'd love to post it to Twitter and add it to the show notes at some point.
Yeah,
that'd be
sure.
Great. That'd be great. Dan, Nick, What are you guys up to?
I got a Parrot AR drone that's gathering dust. It was a gift from my wife for, like, my birthday 3 years ago. I think it needs some replacement parts, but I'm going to see if I can find a battery system and a Raspberry Pi, if I can actually attach a payload to this sort of thing, because I think it would be absolutely hilarious to just fly one of these things around in circles. Imagine instead of having your little Dropbox, like, hiding under some dirt in a planter, imagine having it perched on the roof, and it can come and go as it pleases. The idea is attractive, but it's going to require a lot of braining up, because I have no clue what I'm doing with UAVs at all. I mean, I have a toy. I've never built one. Yeah, how do I helicopter? Yeah,
what you need to do, you need to take the Transcend device and attach it to a Dragonfly. I don't know if you saw the Dragonfly. It was an Indiegogo project that I kickstarted, if you will, or crowdfunded. And it is a little aerial device that is literally not much bigger than a Dragonfly. It's designed to actually carry a fair bit of weight given its size, but it would be awesome for carrying around a little SD-based Dropbox with Wi-Fi capabilities.
Yeah, I'm they also have this really cool little smaller bot on the Ladybug. So, same idea.
You guys are scaring me.
That's what PS for. You're the big bad guys.
And Kyle, what are you working on?
I'm currently working on slides for my DerbyCon talk, but included in that we're discussing how to build development environments to speed up development time for different embedded platforms. There's a couple of frameworks that are out that are public that I'm going to be discussing how to use, along with QEMU, to build emulation environments for compiling and cross-compiling. So that instead of operating in a little 150 megahertz MIPS box with 4 megs of RAM, I can fire up an emulator that runs at 1,000 megahertz with 512 megs of RAM, and do my development in that, and then port that over physically to the device and run it there.
Pretty cool. Well, you guys have to keep me updated, and please contribute. Send everything along for the show notes. All the listeners will be very interested. And I guess that wraps up another episode. Alas, kind sirs and noble ladies, we've come to the end of another show. May you go gently into that good night. Following us on the Twitter at Packet Pushers or at Mrs. Y is Y. You may also find us lurking on Google+. Remember to cavort with the other listeners in IRC at Freenode. Frolic on PacketPushers.net to read blogs by the lyrical Packet Pushers Guild. Subscribe to our RSS feeds and donate to the show, because Greg, Ethan, and I need to buy some lyres and mandolins for our traveling show. Email your comments or questions about this episode to healthyparanoia@packetpushers.net, and remember, it's healthy paranoia, because sometimes they really are out to get you. Right, Dan?
Yes. Yes, they are.